cannot really be taken from the Old Testament, from the book of Genesis, but I want to read, first of all, a verse from the New Testament. The Epistle to the Hebrews, chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 21. Hebrews 11, 21. By faith, Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff. Now I expect to deal with that verse in the closing moments of our message tonight, but I've read it first. That's where we'll close when we come to that verse. Now I want you to turn back to the book of Genesis, chapter 48. Genesis chapter 48. Now, as you know, in the past 3 weeks, we've been seeking to speak to you concerning this man whose name was Jacob and whose name was changed from Jacob to Israel. If ever there was a man that had dealings with God, then he was one of those men. You remember we spoke to you the first night showing how that his background was in that home of disorder. Always keep that in mind when you're thinking of Jacob. And you're tempted to say some of those hard things about him, and they may be true, they may be right, and they've got to be said at times. Nevertheless, remember, he had a poor start in life. A father who was a backslider. Now, I'm always sorry for young people who are brought up in homes where their parents are backsliders. It doesn't give them much of a chance in life. And not only so, his mother was crooked and twisted, a deceiver, and she instilled some of her character into her son Jacob. He had a brother who was a profane man, the Bible says so. Now you can quite understand the background in which he was raised. But God put his hand on him and brought him right out of that house of disorder and brought him to Bethel, the house of God, which was the house of order, you remember. And there he had dealings with God. What a wonderful thing in a person's life when they come to that point in life where they have definite dealings with God. A lot of people think they've had dealings with God when really they haven't. Now, I've met a lot of people in my travels who have a kind of religious profession. Yeah, they became religious. I knew one fellow that felt he would have to become religious. He was sure he would need to become religious. And so his sister got him persuaded to go with her. And he went to a certain local church. And she got the minister to speak to her brother, and he did. And he was fully persuaded what the minister told him must be true. And they got him to join the church, which he did. But he told me himself, he says, I shall never forget my first communion. That particular church of which he joined, they used to hold communion every 6 months. And he said his first communion he'll never forget. When the preacher got up and read from 1 Corinthians 11. If any man eat and drink unworthily, he eateth and drinketh judgment to himself. He said, I could fine have risen and run out. He said, just close my eyes and said, oh Lord, if I'm forgiven for this time, and that's it. Never went back. One day he came under the sound of the gospel. He learned the true way of salvation. See, a lot of people can become religious. And they can join this or join that or do what the preacher asks them to do or recite the thing after the preacher and answer all the preacher's questions. And they think, that's it. No, my friend, having dealings with God is a crisis in one's life. Jacob had that crisis. that night at Bethel when God dealt with them, in the dealings with God. But I took you from there, and I took you right through all the years in which God was training them. You see, when you get converted, that's only the start of it. That's not the end of it. That's only the beginning. That's like entering in at the straight gate. But from there, you've got to walk the narrow path. And if ever you've read John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, you'll know that's not an easy road to travel. You know, I sometimes get amused that our brother this morning, of course, was asking for favorite hymns, and I sometimes chuckle when preachers ask for favorite hymns. You know why? You never know what you're going to get. You never know. I watch this often. You know, you get some young person that's hardly into their teens, never mind out of it, hardly into their teens. And they'll give out their favorite hymn. Years I've spent in vanity and pride, you know. I've never entered into it yet. Don't know nothing about it. Now you get some little boy in the Sunday school, he wants to sing that favorite hymn, Jesus Knows All About Our Struggles. You know. You've noticed that, haven't you? They have their favorite hymn. When you ask for favorite hymns, you know, you never know what you're going to get. See? But however, you see this, when you begin to think of John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress and the entering in at the straight gate and getting to the cross, that's not the end, that's the beginning. There are many hills to be traveled upwards, and there's valleys to be crossed, enemies to be met, decisions to be made. Many a crisis comes in the life of a believer. Jacob had that. He was there in the years of training, in the house of discipline, 20 long years he spent paying out on it. All the lessons he had to learn, do you remember them? He had to learn the lesson on service. He had to learn the lesson on order. He had to learn the lesson on guidance. Then we saw him coming backward, and all that night at Peniel. Oh, what a night. A night he never forgot. A night that left its mark on him to his dying day. And I put it to you like this tonight, if you are a Christian, and you can go back in memory to the time when you first trusted the Lord, you know it all right. You remember the time? You remember the place where the Lord came in and saved you by His grace? You can remember it. But isn't it just as equally true that from then till now there have been times in your life when you've been faced with some particular crisis? And you were thrown back upon the Lord. It was a crisis. It may have been a circumstance of life. Something that took place. Or some difficulty you were facing. And it caused you to get on your knees before the Lord. The crisis. And then you look back on it now and the Lord brought you through. Gave you your direction. That was Jacob. That was the night his name was changed to Israel. But that wasn't the end. From then on, you'll find there were times in his life when the old Jacob nature came out. And other times when the new nature of Israel was manifested. Now, isn't that been true with you? As you look back over the years now, wasn't there times when really you were on the mountaintop? Your face was shining with joy. You were radiating the glory of the Lord, so to speak, to others. Everybody knew you were a Christian. By the way, you were living and acting, but isn't it just as equally true there were times when my things went against you and that old nature came up again and you learned it was still there. And you'll never get rid of it to your dying day. It'll be there with you. And that struggle goes on. Well, now, Jacob left that scene and got back into the land. Now, when Jacob got back into the land, doing the thing that God told him to do, acting according to the will of God, let me shock you a little. These were the years when Jacob had his hardest trials. Not when he was doing the wrong thing, but when he was doing the right thing. His hardest trials came upon him. Now, has it ever given you any consideration, perhaps anxiety, when you've looked around and you've said to yourself, how come? I see people doing everything that's wrong. I know they're doing the wrong things, and yet they seem to be getting on, they seem to prosper. And yet here's me and so, we're seeking to do the right thing. And yet in spite of the fact we're doing what's right, we know it's what God wants us to do, but we are not being prospered, we are not seeing the same results as these other people are doing the wrong thing. And you know, there was other people that said like that. The psalmist one day, he looked around and said, I can't understand this. How is it that the wicked are prospering and the righteous are suffering? Even you see, it caused him some kind of wonderment. Has God fallen asleep? Has God forsaken us or something? Until, you see, there's two ways of viewing a thing. Suppose you went up to Washington and you stood at the base of the Washington Monument. Oh my, you look up at that thing. My wife says, it's moving. My wife declares that it moves. And a lot of other folks say the same thing. But suppose you go up in a plane and fly over Washington, you look down and you say, where's that little speck down there? It looks entirely different, you know, standing at the base of the thing looking up, than what it does when you're flying over and looking down. See, there are different ways of looking at things, isn't there? And when you look at some things from the human level, they look like one thing. Why, the wicked's prospering. Yes, but the psalmist went into the sanctuary. And he viewed the thing from God's point of view. And he saw the ultimate end. And that made all the difference. Sometimes you wonder, and Jacob had a tremendous number of trials. Now, God was working with this man just as a potter works with a dirty piece of clay. You've seen the potter at work, haven't you? If you haven't, it's worth seeing. He takes that dirty piece of wet clay, and he starts to work it on the wheel. And you watch him as he fashions it and he shakes it. He says, what's he going to do with that piece of clay? Well, some of you ladies may have that dirty piece of clay in a very prominent position today. But you wouldn't put an old dirty piece of clay up on display on your display cabinet. But that's what he was. Until the potter worked with it. And he fashioned it according to his will. He had in his mind the picture of the finished article, and he worked on it, but it had to go into the fire. It went into the oven, and through the fire it hardened. And then there's the hand decoration, you know, it's all decorated and glazed, and then again into another furnace. And ultimately it comes out, oh, what a beautiful piece of handiwork. What a beautiful piece you can put on display now. And your neighbors will come in and admire it. So isn't that a beautiful thing? But that thing was once an old dirty piece of clay, that's all. Until the potter worked for it. Jacob was that old, crooked, twisted man in his early days by nature, but God's working with him. Watch some of the trials he had to come through when he came back. He had a trial in connection with his own family. He stayed at a place called Shechem. It's like the glue pot. He got stuck there when he should have gone on. You know, a lot of us Christians, we get stuck at some point. He should have gone on to Bethel. God says, go back to Bethel. He got stuck at Shechem. And as a result, now you who are parents, take note of this. As a result, disgrace came on his family. He had sons, and he had only one daughter. May I suggest his one daughter was the apple of his eye, Dinah. While at Shechem, disgraced. Disgraced. Why? If he hadn't remained at Shechem, it would never have happened, but it did. Oh, I'm sure of this, it broke his heart, his only daughter. God says, Jacob, get up. Go. Not only so, but two of his sons did something there, a dastardly deed, that upset old Jacob. He says, you've done it now. He says, these people will be after us, they'll kill us. Why? Because he had forgot that Jacob said, I'll bring you, God had said to Jacob, I'll bring you back. He lost his confidence in God. Nevertheless, God says, Jacob, get going. And then you see a bright side of his life again when he gets up and he purifies the homestead. Get your idols away. Bury them under the oak tree. Get rid of all those idols. You ask yourself, where did they get them? Well, we can't go into the details of that now, but you study it through where they came from. And they get going. And they get back to Bethel. The place where he first had dealings with God. Back to Bethel. You know, a lot of us perhaps need to get back to Bethel. Get back to the place. That is, get back to the point in life where we're dealing with God and raise again that altar. Get back to Bethel. But you see, now he's back to Bethel. He's doing everything it's like. Surely everything will go better for him. No, it didn't. Watch this. Wasn't it after he got back to Bethel that he had all the trouble with his family? You see, you'll remember that Joseph, his favorite boy, was 6 years of age when he left Padan-Aram. 6 years of age. Now he's back at Bethel, and when Joseph was 17 years of age, 17 now, that was the time when Joseph brought the report to his father concerning the sin of the other brothers, the way they were behaving. We're not told what it was, but you can read between the lines. There was something wrong. Then at that time, when he was 17 years of age, it was then that his brethren hated him. Imagine hatred between members of the same family. How does that affect the parents? When members of the family swear vengeance against each other. Poor Jacob. He's always to pay. Then one day they came in and told him, they said, do you recognize this garment, this coat? Oh yes, that's Joseph's coat. And there's blood on it. Oh my. Where did you get it? They told a lie. Ah, says Jacob, my son must be dead. He must have been torn apart by some wild beast. He wasn't. He was sold down into Egypt as a slave. And poor Jacob thought his favorite son was dead. Then there was a famine. Imagine a famine in the land of promise. A famine in the place where God told him to get back to. You see how the trials are building up one upon another. It is grace of his daughter. The deception by his son. And Joseph is gone. And then they come back, you remember, after going down to Egypt to get cotton. They said, we can't go back unless we take our younger brother, that Benjamin. And by the way, the moment I introduced Benjamin, I want you to remember this. It was when Benjamin was born that Rachel died. I don't want you to look it up now, but take a mental note of it. And look up sometimes chapter 35 of the book of Genesis. And you'll find there the number of times that Joseph went to the cemetery. The old nurse died, his mother's nurse died, and he went and buried that dear old woman, his mother's nurse. Rachel died, the one for whom he had served all those years, the one he loved. He said, give me children or else I die. And she got children. She got Joseph. And she got Benjamin. And she died. That's when Benjamin was born. If you still go there, you go the road from Jerusalem, going down towards Bethlehem, they'll stop at a place, they'll show you Rachel's tomb just as you get to Bethlehem. You had to bury Rachel. By the time you come to the end of that chapter, he was back at the cemetery again. This time it was at Hebron, and he was burying his old father, Isaac. And at that time he had to meet his brother Esau. At his father's funeral. Three times in that chapter, he's at the cemetery. But you know there's another grief in that chapter, and it's worse than that. He had a grief that he never forgot. It was the sin of his oldest son, Reuben. And even when you come to his deathbed and Reuben comes in before him, Reuben, you're as unstable as water, you shall not prevail. And he went back and he mentioned the sin of Reuben as it's recorded in chapter 35. I mention these things to show you how all these things come upon him. And he says, you're going to bring me down to the grave with gray hairs. I'll go down to the grave mourning. That's when they told them they'd have to take Benjamin with them or else they couldn't get corn. And I've often pictured him. Here was the turning point again. As he would stand there at the door and he would watch his sons go away. He let nothing. The 12th one he thinks is already dead. But on that occasion, of course, there's only 10 of them going away because Simeon is already down there. He's taken captive the first time and kept there. So there's 2 of them down in Egypt, and the other 10 going away. And he watches little Benjamin going away. Nothing now. And I said, yes to you, he goes back into the house and rolls the whole burden upon the Lord. But when they come back with wagons and supplies. And they said, you know something? Joseph is yet alive. And they didn't believe him. Can you blame him? They told him so many lies. But watch what has happened, beloved. It seems. Jacob, as a young fellow, deceived his father. The time came when his sons deceived him. Remember me mentioning that to you already? He deceived his father in relation to the position of the favorite son. His sons deceived him in connection with his favorite son. He used a coat that belonged to Esau in order to deceive his father. They used a coat that belonged to his favorite son in order to deceive him. You see how we get paid back in our own coin. But down he goes. And for the last 17 years of his life, he lives down in Egypt. Watch him now. You can travel through his life. He was in the land of promise to begin with. He went out of the land to Padan Aram. He comes back into the land. Then he goes from there down to Egypt and he's out of the land. And then finally he's brought back as a corpse and he's buried at Hebron. That more or less
will give you a faint outline or picture of the nation that developed from them. You find them in the land. You find them out of the land. You find them back in the land. Then you have them scattered out of the land. And in your day and generation and our time, we're seeing them trying to get back into the land, and they've got some of it now. But they haven't seen the end of their worries. They haven't repented yet. But now coming to chapter 48. Here I suggest to you is a beautiful sunset to a stormy day. God has worked with Jacob. He's brought him to the point where he's got him the man that God wants him to be. And I'm going to suggest to you that here in chapter 48, there are some beautiful features that are expressed concerning this grand old man. He's no longer that young fellow with all the confidence in himself, that with all his strategy he can do this and do that and meet his own ends. No, no. He's an old man now who has learned his lesson, and he's learned them well. And there has been developed in this man certain spiritual features, and he's like the vessel that's on display. The vessel you can be proud of. Let me suggest to you that the thing that you see first of all in this chapter is that Jacob is a man of faith looking upward. I want you to look with me at some verses in chapter 48 that suggest to us how he trusts God. Look at verse 3. And Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. Stop there. Here's the old man nearing the end of his days. He said, you know, I have been blessed. He's not speaking of his worries and his troubles and all the mountains he had to climb and all the burdens he had to bear. Looking back over life's pilgrimage, he said, I have been blessed, and it was God who blessed me. That's faith. See, he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder of them that diligently seek him. And he says, if I have been blessed, then I'm going to attribute all my blessings to God. That's verse 3. Look at verse 11. Verse 11, he says this. And Israel said unto Joseph, now you'll notice I said to you time and time again, you get the name Israel and sometimes the name Jacob. You notice this is Israel, the new man that's saying this. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God has showed me also thy seed. Not only is he attributing blessing that he received from God, but he says, as it were, God has given me abundant blessing. Far more than ever I expected. First of all, Joseph, I thought you were dead. I never expected to see your face again. I believed you had been torn asunder by wild beasts. But now here God was behind the whole picture, and I didn't understand it. The fact of the matter is, not only have I come here and seen you, and you've looked after me these 17 years, but here now, I've not only seen you, my child, I've seen my grandchildren. I've not only got you, but I've got your sons. That's abundant blessing. It's far more than I expected. Look again. Look at verse 15. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day. What? Do you mean to tell me that you have been blessed all your life long when I thought of all those burdens and all those difficulties and all those trials and troubles you've had? Yes, God has blessed me all my life long. It's been continual blessing from the hand of God. He's never ceased to bless me. He's a man of faith. His faith is centered in God. He says, God has blessed me. He has abundantly blessed me. He has continually blessed me. Let's go a little further. Look at verse 20. And he blessed them that day, saying, in thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. Why did he set Ephraim before Manasseh? Manasseh was older than Ephraim. But he sets the younger one. He sets Ephraim before Manasseh. And he blesses them. Here is intelligent blessing. Take some time to read it when you get home. See this man now, physically, he's almost blind. That was the same as his father was when he was dying. But Joseph comes in with his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. The old father's sitting on the bedside. Now Joseph wants his two boys blessed. So he brings in his two boys, and he brings in Manasseh in his left hand, and Ephraim in his right hand. And he brings them into his father, expecting his father to lift his right hand on the head of Manasseh, and his left hand on the head of Ephraim, and pronounce the benediction of the blessing on them. But old Jacob may be blind physically, but he's not blind spiritually. He has learned the lesson, and learned it well, that the elder shall serve the younger. You remember how he had to learn that lesson? But now he intelligently crosses his hand and puts his right hand on the head of Ephraim and his left hand on the head of Manasseh. And his Joseph says, no, father, you may... He says, I know, my son. I know. But you see, intelligently now, he was passing on the blessing. You remember when he sought the blessing? He tried to steal it. Instead of leaving it with God. Now he's learned how to do it. You see, when he wanted the blessing, it was the will of the flesh. That he had to get it according to the mind of the Spirit. But here, it's not the will of the flesh, it's the will of man. The will of Joseph. Joseph says, oh no, Father, I want you to put the right hand blessing on Manasseh's head, and the left hand blessing on Ephraim. No, my son, it'll be this way. It must be the blessing that comes from the cross. It's not according to the will of the flesh, and it's not according to the will of man, but it must be according to the will of God. And that's the way the blessing has to be. Here was intelligent blessing expressed by this man. Look at verse 22, last verse of the chapter. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. But now you see, if you look again and join that with verse 21, and Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I die, but God shall be with you and bring you again unto the land of your fathers, and then this will be a portion. Here was prospective blessing, looking forward to the future. Joseph, God is going to bring you into the land. I'm dying here, but remember, God will keep his promise. He'll keep his promise, and he'll bring the generation into the land at his time. And I've given you that portion, and that will be the portion of the tribe that comes from you. Oh, here is prospective blessing. And Jacob was a man of faith, looking upward. Oh, but that's not all. Look at verses 15 and 16 again. Here's Jacob, a man of gratitude, looking backward. And he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Jacob, a man of gratitude, he's looking backward now. And if you look backward over life's pilgrimage, he's filled with gratitude. Goodness and mercy followed him all the days of his life. How often have you quoted that from the Psalms? Lord is my shepherd, shall not want. Takes you on step by step. He's the goodness and mercy following me all the days of my life, and I shall live in the house of the Lord forever. Has goodness and mercy followed us all the days of our life? Sometimes we don't think it, but I wonder when we come to the end, like Jacob, when we look back, if ever the man had a rough time, he had. But now he's filled with gratitude. And he's thanking the Lord, as it were, for all he has done for him. He acknowledges God as the God of promise. Wasn't he the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac? Didn't he make promises to Abraham? Didn't he make promises to Isaac? And didn't he affirm those promises to Jacob? Ah, he acknowledges he was the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac. He's the God of promise. But he acknowledges God as the God of provision. Why, he has fed me all my life long. Isn't it true, Jacob, you came through some famine and difficulty? That's perfectly true, there were famines. But God fed me. We got the corn that we needed. We didn't die of starvation. You know, some of you younger folks, perhaps you've heard some of us older folks talk about the days of depression, and you don't understand it. You've heard about it. But that's all. You don't know nothing about difficulty, as far as these things are concerned. But I can capture now again in my mind men standing in long line on a snowy day. Not only snow under their feet, but the snow coming down on them, waiting their turn, tramping their feet and rubbing their hands to keep warm, waiting their turn to get in the door to a place just about the same size as this, the tables up here where they went and signed their names, waiting to get a little pittance at the end of the week to keep the wolf from the door, coming to about, equivalent to about $2 to buy the provisions for the week. I remember in 1931 having to go and stand in that line. And I remember 1935, for a few weeks, having to go to that line again, in the place where I was working was a short time. The fellow standing beside me, I said, "Hello, sir, are you back here again?" He said, "What do you mean back here again?" I said, "The last time I was here, I think it was 1931, you were here." He said, "I've been here ever since." Four solid years, that man, 3 times a week had to go to that line, summer and winter, stand there and sign his name. Yes, these were hard times, difficult times. To do things then that I hope you young folks never need to do. I hope you never come through those times. Jacob, you came through famine, didn't you? Yes. Did you ever go to bed hungry? No, he says, the Lord fed me. He was the God of provision. And he delivered me. He was the God of power. And he delivered me from all my enemies. He's a man of gratitude. In spite of all the difficulties of the way, he says, I look back and I give God thanks. His heart overflowing with gratitude. Let's look at verse 16 again. Verse 16. And the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lad. I like those words, bless the lad. First of all, you find him here blessing Joseph, and then you find him blessing the lad. Now, if you go back to his early life, Jacob's one ambition was, and his one desire was, bless me, bless me, bless me. It was always me, me, me. Blessings for me. Now he sees an old man, he's learned things. He said, oh, Joseph, let me bless you. And where's the lad? May I pray for God's blessing on the lad? My friend, listen, here's love. If faith is that that looks up, and gratitude is that which is looking backward, love is that which is looking outward and saying, is there anybody else I can help? Is there anybody left that I may show kindness to them? That's what David said, you remember? Is there any left of the house of Saul that I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake? Show kindness. You know, we show kindness, perhaps, at at Christmas. Oh, yes, you couldn't pass by the Salvation Army kettle without putting a dime in, could you? Oh, must have been something. Christmas time, we must do something. And that's Thanksgiving, yes. And Thanksgiving should be every week, every day, as a Christian's concerned, giving thanks. And love looking outward, is there anybody else we can bless? Oh, he's showing his devotion now for Joseph and for Joseph's children, Ephraim and Manasseh. Bless the Lord. Do you get upset when God blesses other people? You don't get jealous, do you? I hope not. Do you ever pray for God's blessing on other people? I hope you do. And when you pray for God's blessing on other people, do you ever think that you might be used as a channel to bring that blessing? Do you? You know, that's true religion. James tells us so. It's not true religion to go along and see a poor fellow, and here he is, he's in his house, and it's a cold night, wind howling outside, perhaps the snow falls. And you go along to see this poor old couple, and the man's in bed, he's got such a flu. His dear old wife trying to work around the house. The house is cold, she's got a coat on. What's the matter? There's no fuel to keep the fire burning, you know, to keep the heat up. You say, well, let's have a word of prayer about it. You pray about it and you say, no, I think you should take a good hot meal and keep the house warm, whatever you do. Keep yourself warm. And you give them some good advice. You can't keep warm on good advice. And you can't fill the stomach with good advice. But suppose you go home and you see the oil man and you say, look, you know that old couple that lives in such a place? I want you to go down there and I want you to put so many gallons of oil in the tank. And you go to the grocer and you get some bread and something to spread on and something to eat. Or you bake something, you take along the basket. You don't need to tell them to eat, just leave it. They know what to do with it. And if you put oil in, you don't need to tell them to keep themselves warm. They'll set up the furnace. And they'll get the house warm. Not good advice to need. It's fuel. And food. Love looking outward. Bless the Lord. Look, hope looking onward. This hope provided a peaceful sunset to that starry life. He says, now look, Joseph, I'm dying. But I want you to remember this. There's a great future before you, for I hope. You're not going to finish your days, you know, as it were, and this. My descendants are not going to finish their days in Egypt. God is a better place for them. God will come in his time and he'll take them out, and he'll take them and he'll establish them in the promised land. So therefore you won't leave me here. When I die, I want you to bury me up there. Because that's where my descendants are going to live. Up there. Friend, listen, God hasn't promised us a place down here. The United States is a great place to live. A very expensive place to die. I've already told the funeral director, if I die suddenly, he's not to entice my wife to choose one of the expensive caskets. I said, you'll give her the cheapest you've got in the place. That's all I need. Sometimes they put me under the ground. Oh, it's covered up, that's all right. Nobody sees it. But this is an expensive place to die. But listen, beloved, this is only the place for the body. He's got a far better place for us, what a hope the Christian has. That blessed hope, the glorious appearing of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ. And what a wonderful place he's got prepared for us. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again, receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Looking onward, Jacob was a man of great hope. He says, now it hasn't happened in my lifetime, but it's going to happen, Joseph.